Every day, millions of men go to work questioning their purpose and how to leverage their gifts for the advancement of God's kingdom. Join us as we hear stories from other men just like you and me who have discovered the answer and are willing to share some wisdom they've learned along the way. Gathering wisdom is like dropping pennies in a jar. Over time, our jars fill up and overflow into the lives of others. Welcome to The Drop.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Mike. How you doing?
I'm well. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Yes, my name is Ed Carcary.
All right. And where are you from, Ed?
Originally Philly, but now Santa Maria.
Okay. I'm sorry.
I get that answer every time.
Yeah. So tell me about your family, Ed.
I've been married for 37 years to Rose. Met her at my first Air Force base in Wyoming, Cheyenne, Wyoming. I was 18. She was 17, still in high school. We got married when I think I was 19 or 20. And we have two boys, 26, Joshua, and 16, Jonathan.
Okay. And where's Joshua live?
Joshua's in Santa Maria, works one of the retailers here, owns his own home, so he's out on his own, doesn't live with us anymore.
Okay. Well done.
Which we're really excited about.
Okay. All right. Maybe a little too excited, huh?
Yeah. Can we edit that?
Tell me about where you're at with your career at the moment.
I have been, since getting out of the military in 89, I have been in radio, TV, digital marketing, event marketing for the last, since then, 31 years now.
Okay. And what is the name of the company that you currently work at?
Emerald Wave Media is the umbrella company that oversees all four of the platforms, the different medias.
Okay. And what does Emerald Wave Media do?
Radio, TV, we do 40 events a year. We do a digital, English and Spanish, anything a business needs. And in Santa Maria, since the way the demographics are, we have English and Spanish products, radio, TV stations, digital, that we can use to help grow individual businesses there.
So the product you produce is what then?
Commercials.
Okay.
We're targeting people like you.
Okay.
To go in and buy stuff from different businesses.
Okay. And on average, how many commercials do you produce, say, in a quarter?
Boy, that's hard to say. On an average day, just to give you an idea of an average radio station, there's probably 100 different companies that are advertising from the local, regional, and national levels, three different levels that are coming in. And the TV, it would be a little bit less people that are coming in. So it's quite a bit that's okay. Funneling through the businesses.
Okay. And do you enjoy the work?
Oh my gosh. If I was allowed to do it 24 hours a day, I would, if I didn't need sleep.
Okay. So what is it that you love about your job?
That's a great question. I believe that God's given each and every person a passion, a purpose and a passion to follow. And it took me until I was 27 years old to figure out what that was. And that's to serve entrepreneurs. So radio became a tool. Radio is not my passion. I love it. So when you say, why do you love it so much? It's not that I love radio or TV. I love serving businessmen and women because they're operating without a net. They go to work every day and they have no idea if they're going to succeed or fail. And if they fail, they still have to pay everybody else and they don't get an income. I love working with people like that, that have that kind of courage and conviction to do that. And we want to partner with them and make life easier for them.
Okay.
That's why I like coming to work.
That's pretty impressive. So let me ask you, what happened when you were 27 years old when you realized this passion?
Well, I'd gotten out of the military. I'd volunteered after 8 years to get out because I wanted to be an entrepreneur. But I didn't have the money for it. So I got into what I thought was the next best thing, full commission sales. The problem is nobody wanted to hire me. I thought it would be easy to
Shocker.
Get a job. I know. I was a 300-pound ex-cop from the military, and all I knew how to do was put people in handcuffs. I've never been in sales, and so everybody had these requirements. They wanted you to have this many years of experience or college education. I didn't have any of this. Finally, I found a small Spanish radio station that was more desperate than me. They hired me on the spot, even though I only filled one qualification. On their list of qualifications, it had probably 10, 12 different things. And I struck out on all of them but one. They wanted a gringo. because they wanted to sell to the white boys and girls out there who own businesses to bring the Hispanic in. So I had that one down pat. I was white enough for them. And for the next year and a half, I was maybe the worst employee ever. I was absolutely pitiful. I took advantage of the company. I lied to the company. I came in late every day. I made excuses. I blamed them for the lack of training and why I wasn't successful. And I hated it. I was looking for a job constantly, but shockers, nobody would hire me. A pitiful example that I was as a salesperson. And then one day the company hired this gentleman named Gregorio. He came in as a consultant and a trainer because they were going to buy another Spanish radio station. Now we were going to have an AM and an FM, which was unheard of in Santa Maria. So they put a couple $1 million into this. They wanted to make sure we as their team knew what we were doing. And Gregorio was the opposite of me. Gregorio was so excited to come to work every day. He was there before the sun came up and before any of us ever came to work. And he was like a puppy dog. You ever seen a puppy dog? You're coming home and that dog's by the door wagging his tail. It can't wait for you to come in. That's Gregorio. He loved doing what he was doing. He believed in it. He actually believed he was helping people. I didn't believe that. He thought our tool of radio could change somebody's business. I never believed that. I hated it. Didn't understand it. Didn't believe in it. And I got stuck with him for 6 months. And somewhere in that process, I changed. It's like being around somebody who's contagious. You don't know when you catch it. You just know all of a sudden you have symptoms. Something starts to happen. Well, some of my symptoms were, for the first time in my life, I didn't use an alarm clock. And now for 30 years, I get up at 4 a.m. every day. I don't need an alarm clock to get out of bed. I don't need to be begged to get out of bed because I'm going to go play. I stopped work that day when Gregorio, when something happened on the inside of me. And I believe he ignited a passion on the inside of me to serve entrepreneurs. And my life radically changed from that day.
Wow. Sounds like an incredible man. He really does.
He was a great guy. And I wouldn't have said it at the time because we fought like cats and dogs. Because again, he had character. He loved doing what he was doing. He wasn't taking advantage of the company. And I hated that because it made me feel bad being around him.
So let me ask you, learning in such close proximity to a man that inspired you and changed your life, did he instruct you or did he just do?
He did. He trained us every day, but it was his example. He didn't just, a lot of us love to talk the talk, but especially trainers, sales trainers. I've worked with many of them and I've become one over the years. And many sales trainers aren't out in the field doing what they say to do. They've lost touch with that. They're behind a desk and they look good behind a camera, but they're not knocking on doors anymore. And that's a different world. He went out every day with us and he did it 12 hours a day. He just would never stop. And it didn't matter if you were a business owner and you said no. He didn't understand no. No was not part of the vocabulary he ever understood. That was like saying there's no gravity. Mm-hmm. That he believed he could help you so strongly, he was going to figure out a way.
Wow, that's really interesting. And I want to explore this more. But before we get there, I want to talk about your background a little bit. Because you do have a really interesting background in the military as well as sports. So can you talk a little bit about how you got in the military? Kind of an overview of your career in the military and then how you were involved with the sports as well.
Okay. I joined when I was 17 and mostly because of the Ayatollah Khomeini. I hated that they were killing Americans. I hated that we weren't doing anything about it. And I wanted to be a part of the solution. My family, very patriotic. Many of them served in the military. And to me, it was a no-brainer to join.
And so you went to boot camp at 17.
I went at 18. I joined a year early. I was a junior in high school, so I couldn't leave until I graduated, but I wanted to be there right away.
Okay.
So I joined when I was 17. I got there when I was 18, and I wanted to be a policeman because I just love justice. I like there's a right and a wrong. To me, there's no gray area. So being a cop in the military seemed like the right role for me. And that journey took me to Europe, where we were stationed for 5 years in Germany, and they had a football team for each base there. And it's like Division II football. But boy, what a great experience. Got to play over there for 5 years, win some championships, and that was the highlight of it. Europe was wonderful. We had such a blast over there, but playing football was just awesome. And that experience translates, as you know, into our civilian lives. Mm-hmm. The playing a team sport works really well in an office setting or a business, helping to run a business. It's the same concept. It's delayed gratification. It's focus, dedication. It's learning to play well with others and do your part. Do more than what's asked for you. So that the football taught me quite a bit. The military and football combined was a great foundation to spring into civilian life.
And I'm going to brag on you a little bit because you didn't play football in high school, did you?
No.
Yeah. So you all of a sudden try out for your base team and you exceed in it. And actually, you had an opportunity to play professional as well.
Well, I tried, but I got exposed. Okay. I got a tryout because my speed and strength were in the top percentile of the NFL at the time. But one day on the practice field, I was exposed because I didn't pay attention to the little things. I thought speed and strength were everything. And my coaches used to tell me I should work on my three-point stance. I should work on my leverage and what you do with your hand, your left and right hand, and how big of a step you take, your first step, and how to read the flow of the offense. I didn't do any of that because to me that was peewee football. I wanted to bench 500 pounds.
Okay. Could you?
I didn't get there. I got to 480 was the highest I got.
Slacker.
I know. I'm telling you. Yeah. And I thought getting faster. I ran a 4.8, but I thought if I could get faster, all those things were important, but never the fundamentals. Okay. And then on a pro field, those men, they know the fundamentals. So a smaller, slower, weaker man will always beat a faster, stronger man if he understands the fundamentals. And it happened. And anybody with half a brain could see it in 10 seconds. I didn't belong there.
How is that lesson that you just explained about the fundamentals translated in how you approach your business?
I think it's everything. And I think we train this in sales a lot that we miss the little things. We're not willing to do the small things. So we want to go and put a notch in our belt and get a contract. We want that end result so badly that we focus on that, but we forget about the little things of building a relationship with that man or woman who's running the business, of connecting with them, doing, and that's work. As you know, any relationship, whether it's marriage or a friendship, that takes quite a bit of work to do. We want to skip those things because we like the romance and the sexiness of, I got to get faster and bigger and stronger because that shines a light on me. Mm-hmm. But doing that foundational stuff, like in football, working on your three-point stance, that doesn't make me look better in the eyes of the people. So we miss those things. The work in the relationship in business and doing more than what's asked, showing up earlier, producing results, even if you're working for somebody that you don't like, but doing it anyway because you want to honor God and doing those little things that nobody sees, but you know them. Mm-hmm. Those to me are everything, and they should be to us.
So in this experience, you get out of the military, you have some really success in the sport of football, then you get your first job. You get your break, and you talked earlier about how you were just failing morally. And then you met this mentor, and that helped. But at some point in time, did you have an encounter with Jesus?
We did, all at the same time. And I knew you were going to get to this. I wasn't leaving Jesus out of the equation.
Okay.
This was the best part, because it all coincided at the same time, as if there was a divine plan. Can you imagine? And we had been for years, people had been planting seeds in our life. I can list the men right now. I can see them as I close my eyes, and they paid a price for it because I was such an idiot as a non-Christian. I hated Christianity. I believed men and women were weak to have to follow Christ.
Why did you hate Christianity?
I just thought it was a weakness. I didn't think that you could be strong because you made an excuse. Well, God took that from me, or God did it, so therefore you were absolved of any responsibility in your life. Well, God made me this way to have no character. And even as a non-Christian, I couldn't accept that. Mm-hmm. So I hated Christians because it just seemed like they were such hypocrites and so weak. I didn't see a difference between them and me. Mm-hmm. They didn't shine. I didn't see evidence of a life, of a divine life in them. To me, I just saw weakness. And again, that was coming from a man who was very angry and a little jaded. Mm-hmm. But these men kept planting the seed. They were so faithful, even when I persecuted them. And one of them I hurt. I physically hurt him badly. And I did such terrible things to some of these guys, but they kept planting seeds. And I was not ready. I would not do it. But my wife, Royal, she was the whole time. She wanted to. She kept saying, we've got to make this decision. And I just refused out of ego and fear. But when we got here to the States, and I was working in this job, this radio job that I hated, and because we were full commission and I wasn't making money because I was such an idiot, I wasn't getting paid anything. So I'm living off credit cards. And we got into such debt. And we started this small business in our house, and we were investing in that using credit cards, and we just kept getting worse and worse. And the stress got so bad. I remember it was the third Thursday in June. It was 7:30 in the morning. My wife got out of bed, and she said, I've had it. I'm done. I'm not waiting for you any longer. I'm going to get down on my knees right now, and I'm going to accept Christ. I'm going to do what they told us to do. So you get on your knees too and do it. And if you don't, I don't care. I'm doing it. So I was a good husband. I'd learned. I didn't want another beating. So I got down on my knees and she prayed the prayer. I followed her. She didn't know what she was doing. But with Jesus, we don't have to know what we're doing. We just have to call out on his name and let our hearts match our message. And she gets done and she's so excited. She's up and she's just so happy. And I'm crying. I was just crushed, just devastated because something had happened on the inside of me. Just, and that day, radical change started to happen. And then along with Gregorio coming into my life, growth was just exponential.
So after this moment where you were crushed and you surrendered, what did you do next to build the foundations in your life with Christ?
This is where other good men came into my life because we didn't know really what to do. And there was a gentleman named Bob Louth who still lives in Lompoc and Wesley. They came to us and they just started planting more seed. They were there prior to us accepting Christ also. And they started coming to us and doing Bible studies with us. They started a Bible study in my house at 6 a.m. on a Friday morning, every Friday morning. And it grew to about 20, 25 people. Can you imagine 20, 25 people coming at 6 a.m. on a Friday to a Bible study?
Not to your house.
I agree.
Okay.
But who wants to, I mean, most people don't want to get up and do anything.
Right.
You got to get up at 5 and every week. And it was such an exciting time. And then from there, Wesley introduced us to his church, Lompoc Christian Fellowship in Lompoc. And we were living in Santa Maria. And we started going occasionally, and then it got more and more, and then and growth just exploded.
At the same time that this kind of growth in Christ and your faith and taking the mantle of leadership, I'm sure was something you did in your family to take over as a leader in your home spiritually, were you dual tracking in the sense that the same time you were growing, that the business side of you was growing as well?
Huge growth.
Do you attribute that to your spiritual growth?
Yes.
Why do you do that? Why do you attribute that to your spiritual growth at the same time you professionally developed?
Because spiritually, that's who we are. I mean, these bodies, they're gonna go away. They're gonna wear out. But we are a spirit being living in a body that has a soul. We were created in God's image and likeness. So from our spirit, our foundation, everything else grows out of. If we've got that right, everything else will start being right in our lives, physically, emotionally, spiritually, financially, relationally. All those things will, if we can get the spiritual part right with God, all those other things will grow out of that fertile soil.
Mm-hmm. And how early on, and then maybe there's a middle ground and then there's now, what have you done as far as daily disciplines or whatever to continue that growth?
Daily disciplines, I have a lot of routines, a lot of things that I do, especially in the mornings, because I believe mornings are critical for our day. How we begin a day usually unfolds throughout the day. So I believe you have to own the first 30 minutes to 60 minutes of your day. And most people, they get out of bed and there's no real plan. They usually have hit the alarm clock, the snooze button half a dozen times, and they're hurting themselves. They're putting themselves behind the eight ball. They're giving themselves a disadvantage throughout the day by doing that. So the first thing you've got to do is you've got to have a set time you're going to get up no matter what. It doesn't matter what time you've gone to bed. Get up every day at the same time, which it helps if you go to bed at the same time every day. But have a plan and get up at that time. And when that clock goes off, get out of bed. Get it done. And then I always drink at least 2 full glasses of water. I do some exercises and stretches. And then I take a cold shower every day, no hot water, always a cold shower, because I'm trying to create pain that we get comfortable being uncomfortable, because it's a victory. It's another victory. Every one of these little things that we do in the morning, they're either a victory or defeat. They're an anchor or they're a sail. They're helping you or hurting you. There's no gray area there. And most people are setting their day up to fail because that first 30 minutes, they don't own it. They haven't done anything. And then they're in neutral the rest of the day and wonder what the heck happened. And they're not producing the results they should because they're not owning that morning. They're not getting the right nutrition in, the right sleep, the right exercise. They're setting their body and their minds up to fail. So my morning routine, that by, when I get to work, I get done now in 2 hours what used to take me 2 days, because it's so focused, and never touching a phone. You know, that goes off to the side because there's work to do. There's those first 2 hours, and then after you get to work, they're critical to get your job done. But so those routines, I'm a huge believer in. I think we were created that way, to have that routine. And if we don't, again, it sets us up to fail throughout our day. And then the days go into weeks and so on. And nothing changes.
So between 4 and 6 every day at the Car Carry House, you're working out. You're praying. You're in your Bible. You're exercising. You're hydrating. You're providing the nutrition for the day. You're setting the template for your day to attack every single day.
Yes, but there's it's small things of those. Okay. I'm not spending – I don't do a full workout. I used to, but I found my prime time for a workout is 3 o'clock every day. And that's when I work
out. In the morning?
No. Oh. In the afternoon. I'm sorry. No, in the afternoons, 3 o'clock is such a prime time to – for me. But I've tried everything at night, okay, in the mornings. I used to get up at 4 and do the hour exercises, and it just didn't – it didn't do the same for me. Now it's just light stretching and exercising just to loosen up, get the blood flowing in the morning.
Sure.
So I do a little bit in the mornings to get started. And I want to get to work by 5:30, 6 o'clock, 6 at the latest. So that gives me 2 to 3 hours before my team comes in. And it's amazing how much you can get done.
No distractions.
None.
So besides this, the regiment of the morning stuff, tell me about some of the spiritual disciplines that you and your family incorporate into your life.
Well, I think they're the same disciplines everybody has, but it's got to be things that we put into action. We're big believers in the doing part of our lives. So if Scripture says to us to give, which we know that under 10% of the church will actually tithe. I don't know if those numbers have changed. It's been a long time since I've done research on that. But we're not big on giving. And again, that's just statistically. That's not me saying it. I'm just going by what some of the polls are saying. That's an area that we have to discipline ourselves in, that we've got to learn to give.
And things. Are you talking financially or time or all of the
everything.
Above?
Okay. I believe that we're supposed to give tithes and offerings of everything that we have, because I don't believe anything that we have is ours. We're stewards, which just means I'm a manager. This body, I'm a steward of. My relationship with my wife and my sons, I'm a steward of. I don't own them. I was given them. My job, the companies, even though a name might be on a pink slip, they belong to God. Mm-hmm. So as a manager, I've got to make sure I'm following what he decrees for the business or the relationships. Not that I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, talking about it's really easy to sit here with right. You now when there's no pressure. It's really easy to say all the right things, but following through and doing those things and giving your life and serving your community and getting involved in your community and not just your job, but going above and beyond that, because I believe God has a plan for our communities, and he's looking for catalysts, for people to get out there, that it's not their responsibility. They're not the police chief or the mayor or somebody who's influential. They're just Joe Lunchpail, and he's looking for those people to take an interest in their community and get involved somewhere and give of their time, their gifts, their mm-hmm. talents, their energy, their money, mm-hmm. whatever it happens to be. To me, that's one of the most important things that I believe Christ in my life has called me to and our family. It's to help to change and transform our communities.
And I could attest that you are a leader in your community. You do a lot. You're very active. I, from the sidelines, I've seen you really push the agenda. Well, let me ask you, how have those, your approach to life, how have you relayed that and discipled your sons on how to do the things that you figured out after, you know, getting out of the military?
Well, as any parent, we always talk to our kids, and I think every parent does. We want to share those things. But again, talking is so cheap. How many times have people told you, Mike, over the years to do this and this and this? But the most powerful message is not the one who can just say it, but who's actually willing to do it. So I like to spend a lot less time telling them what to do, but hopefully they see it in my life. The good and the bad, they're going to see it all. But hopefully there's enough good there that they can take that and learn from the bad. There was a time in our life where we decided not to file bankruptcy over a major business failure that was epic. We lost everything. There was nothing left that the bank didn't take, and they had a right to take it all because it was my fault. And we didn't file bankruptcy because of a number of things. One, I believed I failed. I didn't believe anybody else failed at the business, so it should be my responsibility to pay it back and not you, the taxpayer. But also because I looked at my sons, and they were knee high. But I thought, what are they going to think of me? Here I am telling them to have personal responsibility in your life, do these right things, own up to your mistakes, and I cop out. And that was a motivator for me. I've never sat with them and went through all the process with them, but they watched us. For the 10 years it took us to dig out of that hole and pay people their money back, for the most part. Some people charged us off. Some people just wrote it off. But for the most part, we paid it back. And they got to see that. They got front row seats to see that all get done. It took a long time, and we had to really radically change our lifestyle to be able to do all of that. But I'm hoping that that's going to carry more weight than me sitting down with them and saying, here's what you should do, mm-hmm. and just preaching at them. It's got to be a combination. Hopefully they see more than they're just hearing.
Sure.
Again, my opinion.
Yeah, that's a very, very good answer. So for those that maybe not are in your orbit that can't see that example, what kind of wisdom or disciplines would you impart to them? What would be some of the takeaways you've learned on your journey that you would say, here's your path, here's what you need to do on it?
Great question. And I wish if I could go back 30 plus years and just slap myself a few times to get this.
I can do it now. Or Rose could, I'm sure.
Thank you, brother. I know I can count on you.
Well, I got your back.
I can feel the love.
Yeah.
It's mentors. I am such a believer now in mentors. I had too big of an ego to do it before. But a good mentor cares, and this is why I think we don't like them. And it's one of the reasons I don't like mentors, is because they care more about your future than they care about your feelings. And we care today about our feelings. The problem is we have a lot of people around us that care a lot about our feelings. We have family and friends. That's why a family and friends cannot be your mentor, because they care too much about your relationship and your feelings. I remember when the business that failed, it was a restaurant. And I remember people, as they found out about it, people were coming up to me and they were patting me on the back and saying, you know, Ed, restaurants have the highest failure. You worked hard at it. Don't worry about it. You'll get it next time. That felt good. It made me feel good. Did it help me? Do you think it helped me?
Probably not.
No. In that second it did, because I felt good, but feeling good doesn't pay the bills. Feeling good doesn't build character. Feeling good doesn't raise two boys. Feeling good doesn't stay married. It's got to be more than that. What changed for me, a mentor, when I finally got the courage to bring my paperwork from the failure to one of my financial mentors, I sat down after he reviewed it all. Here was first words. I promise you, this was what he said to me. Ed, you're an idiot. This is a man who didn't care about my feelings. Mm-hmm. He told me the way it was. He said, look, if you would have come to me 6 months before you shut your business down, I could have saved it. I could have saved your other businesses, and I could have saved your home. He goes, if you would have come to me, here's what you did. And he laid out all these mistakes, things I didn't know. And I left that meeting so butthurt, so offended, because my feelings got trampled on, my ego. And it took me 2 days to figure out he was right. He was absolutely right. And that helped to change my life, to get me back on track again. And that was a mentor. That's why we don't like those people, because they tell you the truth. But a good mentor will get you from where you're at to where you want to be in half the time, making half the mistakes and half the costs. You got to find them.
How do you do that? How do you find a mentor?
And it's so much easier than we think. This is the thing. We don't want to ask people because we get intimidated. We look at that successful man or woman out in business or in ministry or in whatever field they happen to be, and we go, oh, they don't have any time. They'd never want to talk to me. Oh my gosh, I've had one person turn me down. In the last 20 years that I find mentors, one person said no to me. That's it. And the overwhelming majority of them said yes to free. Because here's what I usually offer. Here's how I approach somebody. Let's say I'm going to come to you, Mike, and I need your help as a mentor in my life. I want you to be help become accountability partner in my life. I would come in and I'd say, Mike, look, I know you're busy. You got crazy things and you're crazy successful. Would you be willing to meet with me once a month? I will buy lunch. I'll meet you at the office. I don't care if it's at midnight. I don't care where you're at or when you want to do it. I'll be there, and just give me a half hour so I can run by some things with you and you can help me, because I need somebody that is going to protect me from me. And if I ever don't do what you've asked me to do, the homework you give me each time, and I want you to give me homework, then you fire me and I'll never bother you again. So, which means I'm not going to be late. I'm not going to stand you up. I'm not going to make excuses. I'm going to do my homework. I will honor you in your time. Would you do that? One person, and I've asked hundreds.
Wow. Hundreds.
Yes, because I believe you need mentors in every area of your life. Mm-hmm. You can't just have one mentor that you go to, because who can handle spiritual life, your relational life, your physical life, your financial life? Who can handle all of that? You need to find men and women, and I would rather find men, but around me, have a board around me that protect me from me. Mm-hmm. Because if not, I'm going off the reservation. My ego, I'll guarantee I'm going to do it.
Okay. How did you learn this? How did you come to this conclusion about the need for mentors in your life? What happened?
We failed in business twice and lost everything. I'm tired of failing.
All right.
I'm tired of epic failing. And that's because I'm so headstrong, I want to do it my way. Well, I'm too old to start all over again and do this. So this was after my last major failure. So this is 15 years ago now that I decided I've got to do this better, because I'm my own worst enemy. Mm-hmm. All these failures are my fault. And here's one of the greatest things a mentor taught me. After my last epic failure, he said, there was three things he taught me, but this one's the one that stood out. He goes, Ed, because we like to buy stress businesses. I love turnarounds. He says, you can never keep a business more than 18 months. He said, 12 is better, but no more than 18, unless you put insulation between you and the business and have another person run it and separate you with a board so that you can't get in, because you kill the business. You get it up and then you walk away because you're bored. You want a new toy. Mm. I didn't know that about me.
Okay.
And I would have kept on it. I would have been a serial entrepreneur, a serial failing entrepreneur, because I would have kept on doing the same thing, thinking I would get different results.
Okay.
We got to have mentors.
Okay.
Got to have them. And they all want to say yes to you. I guarantee you they want to. Who doesn't want somebody coming up to them and saying, you're crazy successful. Would you give me just 30 minutes and I'll buy you lunch? Would you turn that down, Mike?
No.
No.
Absolutely not.
Good Lord, no. You want to impart that. Mm-hmm. You want to share that. You want to give back.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's really insightful. And how have you incorporated this mentorship in a spiritual way? So you have sought out mentors, but are you a mentor as well?
Yes. I believe everybody has to be a mentor, mm-hmm. and everybody's a mentee. Because no matter where you find yourself, you have something of value to share. You have a story that's unique to you. You've got a God-given purpose and passion. And God created you so uniquely, there's never been another one like you. So you've got to be able to share. I've had people say, well, I'm broke. I'm just a janitor. I'm like, are you kidding me? You have a work ethic. You're raising a family on that income. You know how many people out there that don't know how to do what you're doing? Don't know how to be a good man, a good husband, raising your kids, showing up and lighting the universe of your job on fire, being that man that makes it rain every day? You need to mentor the world. Everybody has a message. Everybody's got to be a mentor. And everybody has to be a mentee.
So if you have a mentee that you're willing to invest in, and they come to you and they ask you, how do I find my passion, Ed? How do I do that? What would be your response to them?
Well, first, they have to understand what passion is, because, man, there's so much misinformation about passion, especially from the world. Of course, there is. Passion is something God gave us. So it's not something – remember earlier I said most people think I'm passionate about radio, or you talked about the Philadelphia Eagles, and I'm passionate about that. No. I like them, but I don't have pictures of my radio station up on the mantle or in my phone, in my wallet.
But by the way, this is the first time I've seen you without Eagles garb on, just for the record, okay? You look good, by the way.
It is God's team, so I do want to share that, okay?
Fair enough.
passion is this. It's always, always, always directed to a specific group of people that you were created to serve. It's not about your job. It's not about fishing. I've had guys tell me, well, I'm really passionate about fishing. No, you're not. You like fishing. You're not. Passion, Christ showed us the path for passion. He came to save people, to serve them. He laid his life down and gave everything God gave to him and gave it to everybody. He invested everything he had into everybody else around him. And he invested in those people that were physically around him. He didn't invest to everybody in the world. He didn't try to change everybody in the world. He changed the people. His job was to change those people he was around every day. So who are you around? Outside of your family, because that's a given. You're going to do that. That leads you into the marketplace, your job, your business. Somewhere there, it's hidden. Your job is just a tool to reach those people. Here's how you find it. Get involved in something outside of your job, serving your community. I don't care if it's with a church, a nonprofit, a board, but somewhere where you got to roll up your sleeves and that you have to give of yourself, your time, gifts, and talents, not for a resume, not to look good, not to punch a ticket, but just because, and get involved. And it may or may not lead you to your passion. It will lead you to your passion, but it might not be your passion at first. You could make a mistake. The first one we did when we got involved in ministry, a youth pastor came to us and said, would you be my assistant in the youth ministry we're running, first church we were at? And we said, yes, sure. And oh my gosh, the first night, I knew we made a colossal mistake. It was horrible. She was ministering to the gang kids of Lompoc. So we had 50 kids, all Hispanic and black in the church. And our youth pastor is black. Me and my wife walk in, and the church went crazy. They moved to the whole other side of the church, wouldn't sit with us, hurling horrible things at us. But we committed. We said, we're going to do this for a year. That was one of the toughest years we ever had in ministry. And for months and years after that, I questioned God, why? Because we poured ourselves into these kids, and it was so hard to minister to them, because most of them didn't want anything to do with us. And it wasn't until, it was probably 8 or 10 years later, I'm in a grocery store buying produce, and this big guy, big Hispanic guy comes up to me, young guy, and he says, you're Pastor Ed, aren't you? And I said, who are you? I didn't even know who he was. He goes, I'm Jose, I'm Big Jose. And I remembered Jose. Jose carried a gun with him in church a lot of times. Mm. Watched his parents get killed in a gang fight. Mm. Jose was a tough kid. And he had just gotten out of prison. And he'd gotten out of prison a couple of years ago. And he says, look, I've been looking for you. I've wanted to tell you this. I'm a youth pastor now. I have a wife and a young son. And when I was sitting in prison, my life finally changed, because all I could remember was what you and your wife Rose did for us, and the things that you invested into us, even though we hated you. He goes, that changed my life. I broke down and cried over the bananas. I was just a mess. Because up until then, I thought that was all a waste. Why? I questioned God, why did you have us waste a whole year doing this? We did nothing. We didn't help anybody, obviously. I didn't see it. So he allowed us to see that, to get a taste of that. So what I'm saying is, You've got to get involved in something that's bigger than you, that has nothing to do with you. And that's where you learn. That didn't lead us directly to our passion, but we started to figure things out. Mm-hmm. What it was, we learned obedience. We learned to love something that didn't love us. We learned discipline. We had to, God is honing us, mm-hmm. sharpening us. And we had to go through that process. And the best way I can tell you to do it, get out and serve people. Because there's nothing more fulfilling and nothing more terrible than serving people. Because it will refine you. Mm. Like Jesus said when they were going to feed the fishes and loaves to the 5,000. And he tells his disciples, get out there and break them into groups of 50 and feed them. And they're starving. And they only have a couple fishes and loaves. I love that he told them, go out and you get involved in the people. You be the waiters and waitresses. That's a horrible job. That can be a really dirty job. And he's telling them, you get out there and serve. Roll up your sleeves. Get out among the people who are hungry right now and who are probably going to be ugly with you and learn to serve them.
Wow. Ed, I just want to say thank you for the time today. I've always respected you and you've been a blessing in my life, but I kind of want to ask you a question here, and it kind of relates to what you've been saying, and I want to make sure you've conveyed what you have, what wisdom you have to share. Is how do you define success?
I think that is different for every person, and it's based upon what God has given you to do. So you have a unique purpose and passion he gave you. You're a piece of the jigsaw puzzle. So success for you is fitting that piece in the right place so that you are fully connected with those people around you, meaning serving those people around you. That's success, regardless of the finances, regardless if your name's in the paper or the title that you have. You're successful because you did what God said to do. You've achieved the purpose he gave you. And to me, that's so critical because we don't become anything except for what God has given us. He gave us talents, gifts, and abilities. We've just refined them, but he gave them to us. I didn't develop any talent in me. I didn't, as a baby, say, wow, I think I'll take this from the grocery store, this. I want to be able to do this. No, no, no. Everything we have is because God, in his mercy, said, I want Ed or Mike to have these gifts and talents because I see who they're going to serve. So we have everything we have because of him, so that he can use us to funnel through to those people that we fit in the jigsaw puzzle.
Mm-hmm. And the message that you just conveyed regarding success, it's something you can't do alone, is it?
No. Success is a team sport. That's the way God created it. We're on a team, his team. And we're there to serve those people around us. And that's why mentorship is so critical. There's no lone rangers in the kingdom, in God's kingdom. We've got to do it his way. And when we do, that's when all this unbelievable stuff starts to happen.
So final question, looking back at that 26, 27-year-old that you were years ago, many, many years ago.
Seems that way.
What would you tell them? What would you tell that young man? What would be, I understand the mentorship and the daily disciplines, but what else would you share with yourself, a younger you?
Outside of the mentoring, which I think is the biggest thing because I wasn't willing to do it at that point, it would be learn to work on, for me, my greatest weakness has been my ego and anger. And it's something I've had to, I think I'll always continue dealing with it. It's never going to go away. Is getting help sooner in that area because that has caused me every major problem I've had in my life, it's always boiled back to one of those two things, my short temper and my ego. And those are not things God gave me. He does give us an ego and he does give us an anger towards things of sin, but not people. I just was using them against people. Tools he gave me, I'm misusing them. And that's gotten me into a lot of trouble. So finding help earlier on that, I would have loved to have done that instead of waiting so much longer because it caused me so much more pain and grief and others around me so much more pain and grief.
You know, Ed, I really appreciate your time for joining us on The Drop.
Loved it.
I wish you the best success in the future. Blessings to you and your family.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.